of the running for MLA, I got involved because too many of my friends were getting evicted, seeing their massively rise in the West End because of changes that the BC Liberals had made to the Residential Tenancy Act. I got involved because I was tired of stepping over homeless people, and homeless folks that I talked to were tired of being stepped over with a massive increase in homelessness we've seen over the number of years. And I got involved as well to push for stronger environmental protections because I think the climate change crisis is one that's going to affect me. It's going to affect my kids and grandkids. And I got involved as a gay man who decided to stand up for myself as well and stand up for our community. So thanks, Heather, and I look forward to this debate, Laura.
All right. Well, thanks, both of you, for those opening words. Spencer, are you standing next to a helicopter pad by any chance?
Sorry, no. I'm just down at we just finished the provincial leaders debate, and I was down here checking that out and seeing how Carol James and Mr. Campbell and others did. And so, yes, there's a helicopter pad nearby.
So that really was a helicopter we heard.
It was a helicopter. I wasn't on it, though. No.
Is that the last helicopter that's going to
I hope so. Well, maybe I'll stand somewhere else.
Okay. All right. Well, to start off with the topics of discussion, then, unfortunately, Laura, as the representative of the governing party, you're probably going to be on the hot seat more than Spencer tonight, I think. But there are a couple of things that I can think of for sure that the NDP has to answer for. And to be fair, I'll start with one of those. So, Spencer, under the previous NDP government, changes were recommended to the British Columbia Human Rights Act to specifically protect transgendered people from discrimination. And those failed to be implemented after certain feminist organizations complained that they wanted to have the right to discriminate against trans women. And although the BC Human Rights Tribunal has since decided to hear complaints of discrimination against trans people, you know, the fact that the government has not chosen to amend the act to formally provide that recognition arguably leaves some of those decisions, I guess it makes them a little bit insecure if they ever, you know, work their way up through the court system. And I'm just wondering if you can speak to whether the NDP will deal with this issue once and for all if it becomes government after this election.
Sure. No, thanks, Heather. It's 10 years ago, I think, when the NDP was in government, that didn't happen, which in my view was unfortunate. In the brief time I was in the legislature, I was pleased to be able to stand and speak a little bit about watching out for the trans community. I know MLA Shane Simpson in Vancouver Hastings introduced a petition put forward by the Trans Alliance Society calling for those changes. In the 8 years of the Liberal government, we haven't seen those changes. I think it is time. We certainly put the petition forward and we'll support those changes. Now, in terms of those changes, the law is one thing, but I think we also need to be supporting a better education so people do understand the challenges trans folks face, and that we really need to look at the cost of medical coverage for trans folks who are going under gender reassignment surgery. And I know some provinces support it. BC has not been very supportive. I know it closed the gender clinic back in the early 2000s and under this government, and that needs to change, and we need to get on page with what science is telling us and what the trans folks community are telling us. Mm-hmm. And it's a good question, because today I know was declared a Gender Euphoria Day, I think. From the Trans Alliance Society. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, Laura, Spencer's right, of course. We haven't seen any action on this issue under the Liberals either. Where do you stand on the rights of trans people? And what do you see yourself doing about it if you're elected?
Well, you know, I mean, personally, I have a number of trans friends that I am very close with and continue to be close with. I think probably one of the first F2Ms that I can recall anyways was a very, very good friend of mine through the 70s, and he is now very active in trans rights and continues to be and always will be. I mean, it's something that, as I have done my whole life, stood up for the GLBT community, and that includes trans people. That includes gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, and as we like to commonly refer to ourselves as the queer community. So, I mean, I don't think we can piecemeal it out, and I didn't hear Spencer say that his government is supporting changes, but what I will say for myself is that I support trans people. I know what they go through. I've helped a number of people on the front lines, as I mentioned before, one of which is probably one of the longest transgender women that... I think she's 70 now. She's very, she's an extremely good friend of mine. Okay. And the government paid for her gender reassignment, and I worked to supporting her throughout her transition and helped her get the medical needs, because it's not just about...
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up a little, Laura.
Just really quickly, it's also about their medical needs and the kinds of things that that they need to support themselves through the transitionary period after the operation. It's not just the operation, it's after the operation as well.
Mm-hmm. So can I try and pin you both down here then, Laura, Spencer? Laura said that you didn't say that your government actually supported making these changes. So to clarify, does your government support making these changes?
Well, we're not government yet, but
well,
I'm hoping to.
Does your party...
As a party, we do need to make. We believe we do need to make those changes, and I'm hoping to hear the same from Laura about her party.
Okay, well, Laura, you know your party hasn't made those changes.
Right.
Will your party make the change in the next mandate if you guys are elected?
Well, you know, Heather, I can't commit to making a promise like that, but what I can commit to is having a look at some of the issues that our trans people are going through right now and the kinds of things that will help them in their transition, and ensuring that medical and all kinds of services are available to them. And that's one thing that I will definitely support.
Okay. Now, following in the theme of human rights, of course, the British Columbia Human Rights Commission was essentially gutted. What do you want to call it? I mean, it was
closed
eliminated.
Down, yeah,
yeah, closed down by this government, leaving just the tribunal system. Laura, is that something that you part ways with your party on? Would you support reopening the BC Human Rights Commission? And if so, if you're elected, what would you do on that front?
Well, you know, I mean, I can't speak to something that's happened, as Spencer's mentioned before as well. But what I can say is that I think that education needs to happen in terms of how I educate and help my colleagues and assist my colleagues in understanding the plight of persons that are marginalized. And by that, I mean there's a number of issues that we have still to work on, and I want to make sure, again, like I said earlier, that we work on those issues, and that we have, and that my government would be responsive to listening to me in terms of how I think some of these things should move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and
of course, some of those educational things were carried out by the Human Rights Commission.
Yes, I hear what you're saying, and I understand where you're going with that. Certainly, I do. And in fact, I know the woman that was on the Human Rights Commission, her and I have had a number of conversations about this issue. And so, you know, in having said that, though, I still think that we need to find a way where we can balance those issues so that it's to the benefit of all. And by doing that, I still maintain that working with a Liberal government, they're receptive to my thoughts and my ideas, and I want to make sure that with my colleagues, they understand the kinds of things that we go through to struggle and fight for our rights.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
You know, I mean, I can't go back and change what happened, but I can certainly move forward with some of the good suggestions that come to me, and mm-hmm. I would do that.
Okay, Spence, will your party...
Okay.
It would actually be too easy for me just to ask you if your party would go back and change what happened and reinstall the Human Rights Commission. So I'll sort of double that. Will you do that? But more specifically, in light of the fact that we have a huge economic downturn going on right now and people are making all kinds of promises about spending money, how are you going to convince your party that this is a priority over and above all the other things that there are to spend money on right now?
Mm. Well, I think human rights activists have made a very strong case for why they need the Human Rights Commission. I think you know, human rights should not be sacrificed in a time of economic downturn. If people's rights are being abused, chances are they're not participating in the economy in a way that benefits us all, because they've been marginalized. And we've seen that with the gay community, the trans community, with many communities. When they're discriminated against, chances are they're not able to participate as fully as they would if they were welcomed in a diverse society as we have. The Human Rights Commission, I think, provided a pretty key role in standing up for human rights. It was closed, it was shut down, it was gone under the Liberal government. They didn't think it was necessary. I think it played a key role, and I think it does need to come back in a form or other, because it did educate, it did speak out, and it did provide a key place that people could have these discussions about human rights and about how do we bring people together rather than divide and conquer. So in terms of convincing my party about the needs to stand up for human rights, my party's there. We don't have any candidates who have written, you know, homophobic emails, as we've heard from the other party. We don't have any candidates who are who have worked actively against gay marriage and those kinds of things. So I'm feeling pretty confident that the NDP gets the need to support human rights and to support the diversity of all of us.
Okay.
Well, and I think I'm pretty confident in the need for the BC Liberals to do the same. And you know, I mean, since you brought it up, we don't have any candidates who didn't disclose to their party that there was some type of spousal situation that was happening there as well. And, I mean, as a woman who has been the subject which is why I'm not married any longer, of that same kind of abuse, I find it offensive that we're not hearing those kinds of things from your leader around what the incident was.
Laura, would you care to fill us
back
in?
Over here, one more time, is that human rights is across the board. I completely agree with that. And I think everyone's human rights are important, which is why I'm standing for public office.
Mm-hmm. Laura, what's the situation that you're alluding to?
Well, there was a about the situation where
the spousal situation that you're alluding to.
There was a domestic issue
Involving an NDP.
Involving an NDP. Yes.
MLA. Okay.
Yes, that's correct. But can I just go back to something?
I've got to clarify that, because
okay.
I think.
Okay, hang on. Yeah. Now, you know what? Okay, you guys, I'm gonna like totally stop this, because the reality of the situation is that you know, we could both of your parties have lots of skeletons in their closet, and we could spend all the rest of this discussion talking about driving infractions and various other things. I'd rather talk about stuff that the queer community specifically is concerned about. So let's talk about the center and their request for a victim services worker. They have requested funding from the provincial government several times to try and get a victim services worker to assist victims of crime in the West End. Now, is one of you in a zoo?
I can't hear you.
Yeah. Spence?
Sorry, Heather.
Yeah, sorry, no, it's I'm standing in a quiet area, so I'm not sure who's shouting where. But anyway, sorry, go ahead, Heather.
Okay. The center has repeatedly requested funding from the provincial government for a victim services worker to assist victims of crime in the West End, and particularly the gay community. And Jennifer Breakspear says she's been told several times by this government that they don't consider that necessary. So again, I'll ask you, Laura, is that a place where you would take issue with your own party's position? Well, why don't I start with that? Are you in sync with your party on that, or do you believe we do need a victim services worker for the center?
Well, I'm not familiar with this issue in terms of a victim services worker and what happened with the party when that was asked for. I mean, I'd really like to get more information about that before I speak on that issue, because I think that one of the things my party has definitely committed to is ensuring public safety by providing more police officers, 168 this year. And I think that we need to get police officers on the street. and ensuring that public safety is an issue for everyone. And I think it's something that we need to be making sure people are feeling safe walking their community and going about their community without having fear of being injured or attacked.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Spencer, where are you on the victim services worker question?
Okay. Well, I've met with Jennifer Breakspear. I've spoken with the center. I know this has been a request that they've been making for some years, so I'm pretty familiar with the issue and what the government's response has been, and I think that's important. I think what we've got on the NDP platform, I was able to argue for, and I think and get the support of the party, was that we would enhance victim services in the province. Now, I think what that means is, in specific, I've argued for support for the queer community. The center has made their case very strongly, and I think what we would need to do is just basically step in and say, hey, we need support for the queer community in BC, and then the center could apply to provide that support, as could other organizations as well. It's pretty clear, and speaking with the police as well, the police have said, you know, in the past we've had victim support services for communities with 3, 4, 5 or more workers, you know, okay, dedicated to those areas. And in fact, some communities have actually stepped forward and said, we've got enough support. And though that services have not been given to the queer community. And I think we do need that support because we've got very specific issues.
Mm-hmm.
Can,
okay,
I just, Heather, can I just further on that here for a second? Just want to go back to something earlier. I mean, I just want to explain to you here that our budget for 2009 proposes to increase funding for the Crime Victim Assistance Program by $11 million for the next 3 years. You know, so that's 3.5 million.
So conceivably, we could get a victim services worker from the Liberals.
Well, it sounds to me like in our budget, it's there. The money's there. Okay. It's already costed, and it's already in the budget.
Okay.
So yeah. So I mean, you know, I will be advocating for the West End, and I would be advocating for the needs of the West End.
Okay.
That's what we need.
Okay. Yeah. I want to keep this moving because we don't have a lot of time, and I want to try and get as many topics in as possible.
Sure.
One of the issues that has come up, talking to Glenn from BCPWA last week, he was mentioning that some people in the HIV/AIDS community are concerned about the Liberal government's e-health program, which it's working on, which will basically put all of British Columbians' health records into a central database. And so far, that all health practitioners will be able to access, and obviously the positives of that are that it may help people get more comprehensive health coverage.
Mm-hmm.
The negative effects of that are, first of all, that nobody yet knows, or the Liberals haven't said anything yet about who all is going to have access to this. You know, whether the fact that it's produced by an American company, Sun Microsystems, means that our information could be exported to the U.S. under the Patriot Act and that sort of thing, and whether there will be an opt-out policy for people who are concerned about their privacy. So I'm wondering, Laura, can you give us any insight on that? Will there be an opt-out? Can you give us any guarantees that our health records are not going to be shown to our local pharmacist? Can you speak to the issue of shipping data to the U.S.?
Yeah, well, I think that's a great question, and you know, I can understand people's concerns about that. I mean, I remember when I was working on the front line, I couldn't even get any information. This was under all the governments. I couldn't ever get any information on any client, and you know, a lot of times we needed to get on the front lines information about people, and it was very, very, very closed in terms of how that was passed through. My government has, you know, believes that the sustainability of our healthcare system is so important. We've enshrined the principle and law under the Medicare Protection Act. And, you know, the kinds of things that we do, there's certainly things that are protected under FOIPP as well. But the other thing that I think is really a lot more important here is that we need to be able to give the best possible to persons living with HIV/AIDS. And where I understand people's anxiety around this, It's very real. And, you know, we have to ensure that the people who require the information to help the person, people that are looking at those records. So I think that's more the case, that it has to be a comprehensive healthcare plan when dealing with people. So we need the practitioners to be able to access the information they need to move forward with that person's case, and we need to protect people. people living with HIV/AIDS, that their information isn't out in the public domain.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Spence, if your party forms government, you're going to be inheriting this project. I mean, it's already kind of well underway in the production phase, and some would say that this is kind of the direction the world is moving in anyway. So how would you answer the questions that I just asked, Laura? I mean, what kinds of steps would you take to protect privacy, to protect information from being shipped to the States, to protect and to give people, would you give people the option to opt out of the program?
Yeah, I think this problem started because e-health was rammed through quite quickly. I know I've chatted with BCPWA about this, and I've read their articles as well. And I think this program was, it's a good idea, absolutely. Healthcare records, we should have them online and available for doctors across the province. So if you move from one community to another, you can make sure your records are available. I think because it was rammed through with a little consultation with groups like BCPWA and BC Civil Liberties Association, we're in this situation today. I think if information, personally, if information is being put out to companies who then fall under the Patriot Act so that they're then available to the states and they become part of their records, I've got concerns. I think as well, especially in small towns across BC, your pharmacist might also be, the person who, teaches your kids. Maybe they're a part-time pharmacist. And so if your health records are getting out there, we've got concerns. And I think there needs to be stronger protections for those records.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I'm hearing from both of you is we need stronger protections, but I guess it's not a lot of practical sense of how you get those yet. Is that fair?
Well, it's not clear, I think, in public yet on how that system is exactly going to work, aside from the concerns that have been raised, and I hear those, and we've got to respond to them.
Okay, Laura?
I think that there is clear ways in terms of protecting those records. I think that we've seen a lot of people concerned when they were diagnosed with HIV/AIDS that their records were going to be going out. And I remember that in the 80s and the 90s, the hysteria around if we disclose that we have this, then we're going to be. I mean, that proved to be, instead, it proved to be more of a fact that we were able to help people more. And their fears were not realized, which I think speaks to the fact that we need to protect people who are living with this disease. And I have been doing that, as I mentioned, since 1984, and I'm not going to stop now.
Okay. All right.
One of the things that I advocated for as well was Schedule C, which at the time when it was brought to my attention was Schedule F, which puts more food and more more vitamins and the things
Laura, you know what? I'm going to stop you because we're getting onto a whole other topic now.
Okay, sorry about that.
We've probably got time for one more discussion topic, and of course, I'm going to bring up the issue of tenants' rights. Christine Ackerman has been on the show talking about some of the problems facing tenants in the West End and elsewhere in Vancouver. Among them, two of the big ones have been complaints about landlords evicting tenants for renovations that could be done while tenants are still in residence, and then increasing their rents massively. And the other one has to do with landlords applying to raise rent or attempting to raise rent by ridiculous percentages using the geographic market rent increase by pointing to like one or two overpriced suites in their own building and then using that as evidence that, rents have gone up massively in the region, whether or not that's actually true. So a couple of recommendations from the Renters at Risk organization are to get rid of the geographic market rent increase and to prohibit landlords from evicting tenants for renovations that can be performed while tenants are still in residence. So let's start with you this time, Spencer. Does the NDP support those two recommendations? Will they carry them out if elected?
I can say unequivocally, yes. One of my first acts as an MLA was to introduce the Long-Term Renters Protection Act, which would have stopped that kind of a situation which we've seen at the Seafield in the West End, where rents are now supposed to climb up to 40% in this building. That's nearly $500 extra a month, and that's going towards two tenants who've lived there since 1961, Rowley and Mary McFall. These are people quite elderly who love the West End and have lived there most of their lives. That's something that shouldn't be happening in BC, especially now, given the current economic situation. We need to be doing more to make sure that people can stay in their homes, not continuing to support legislation which is allowing them to get kicked out or to see massive rent increases. And this is something that's supported in Ontario. This is something that's supported in Quebec. This is something that's supported in many jurisdictions because it's about balance between landlords and renters. Now, I'm a landlord and a renter, and I think I, as a landlord, I could never understand how somebody could apply for a 70% rent increase.
Okay. Again, Laura, this is your government that has been permitting these things to go on. Where do you stand on these issues of particularly the geographic market rent increase and the issue of landlords being able to evict tenants for arguably cosmetic renovations? Would you take your own government to task on this?
Well, first of all, the BC Liberal government has been responsive. I mean, it's about balancing the rights of tenants and the rights of landlords. I mean, if we have we have put in place the Residential Tenancy Act, and for the most part, the burden of proof is on the landlord. You know, we've kept these to inflation plus 2%, and you know, in the rare cases where such a thing is proven and the tenants are not given the rights haven't been for the tenants, then the tenant has that right to appeal, which they've done. So, I mean, we have to make sure that in this case that we have a neutral board, and this is a neutral board, and each case stands on its own merits. So what I'm saying here is that with the West End being such a diverse riding with lots of diverse living units, of course we need to balance both of those rights.
Okay.
We can't make it a disincentive for landlords to renovate their buildings, and we can't make it difficult for people to live and remain in their apartments. So that's why we have an independent body making those decisions.
All right. Why don't I just, I'm going to open this up for like a minute of debate, if you guys would like to discuss this freely, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay. So basically, I guess I'm hearing from your answer, Laura, is that the Liberals won't change the Act, that it's working okay, and that these situations are fine, and that it's up to the renter to stand up for themselves. In my view, the situation is not okay. The Act needs to be changed, and I'd love to hear that from you, because the West Ender residents have been calling for it for years. They're calling for it in Victoria City Council, Vancouver City Council. They're calling for it in Kamloops. They're calling for it in Burnaby and Prince George. The Act is not working. When you can get a nearly 40% rent increase, any sort of rent control that exists is gone, and more people will be forced out of their homes. So I'm hoping I can get a positive response, because we need that change.
Well, what you will hear me say, Spencer, and I thank you for that, because it shows that you know that I will advocate for the rights of tenants and people's rights. One thing that I did get from I spoke with Minister Coleman, and he was mentioning to me that every act on the books is an election cycle is open for review. And, you know, I would certainly be willing to review and look at what's currently there and how it works and whether or not it is balancing the rights of tenants and landlords.
Okay, so just to respond, Rich Coleman told me that he thought the Act was working fine and it didn't need changes.
Okay, and he told you that prior to an election. He told you that when you were in, you know, I guess when you were elected or shortly after. Is that correct?
He told me it about 4 weeks ago.
Right. Okay. So 3 days ago, what he said to me was that every act and again, you know this as well as I. I'm not going to make promises that I can't keep. But what I can tell you is that in any election cycle, as you know, Spencer, there is every act is open for review. So if that's something that needs to be reviewed and needs to be looked at, then I will speak to Minister Coleman and talk about what kinds of reviews could or would be needed within the Act, if any are needed within the app.
Okay. I'm going to wrap things up here. Laura McDermid of the Liberals, Spencer Herbert of the NDP, E2, thank you so much for making the time to come on the program this evening. I really, really appreciate it. And best of luck to both of you.
Thanks very much, Heather.
Heather, thanks very much. Spencer, and, I guess we got to stop meeting like this.
Yeah, all the best. I know we'll see each other again at the Extra West
think
debate.
We will. Yes, we will.
Wednesday.
Okay, Heather, thanks very much.
Wednesday night is Extra West. Is that right?
The 6th.
Hello, okay, Spencer here.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
It's buzzing.
All right. Have a great night, you guys.
Bye-bye.
I believe it's Wednesday night, the Extra West All Candidates Debate. I will look it up and confirm that for you in just a second. But again, very many thanks for the incredibly civilized discussion with Spencer Herbert and Laura McDermid here on Queer FM on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And this is Joanna Chapman-Smith.
Where are you from? Or better yet, where are your parents from? Or should I ask, after your particles, your ashes and your dust? These arbitrary lines, they're getting in my way. They're getting in my way. These arbitrary lines, they're getting in my way. So what is pure and when is right? How unnatural and real? Where do these lines first come from? Who marks them down and why? These arbitrary lines, they're getting in my way. They're getting in my way. These arbitrary lines, they're getting in my way. Getting in my way. Arbitrary lines. He took my heart, he took my home, he took everything I own. But who am I to draw a line that says what's his and what is mine? But then again, sometimes I need a line to lead the way.
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. There is Joanna Chapman-Smith from her CD Contraries. That was Arbitrary Lines. I just saw her on Friday night. She was singing with C.R. Avery at his show at the Biltmore. Holy smokes! I had never seen C.R. Avery before live. I'd heard him on record. I always thought he was really cool. I had no idea how great a show he puts on live. If you've never seen him or heard his stuff, he sort of came up through the slam poetry community, but he also plays harmonica and some keyboard, and he does the human beatboxing thing, and it was just amazing. I mean, you know, he can like beatbox and play accordion at the same time, and beatbox and sing at the same time. Like, he kind of fits the words between the beats. It was really, really cool. And he had like a string quartet and chorus line with him. It was a completely cool show. So yeah, Joanna Chapman Smith moves in an awesome artistic circle. This is Queer FM. I am Heather, CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. And coming up on the show, Callan Brecken, Vancouver's gay top model, will be reporting on last Sunday's Extra West Hero Awards. And in just a few seconds, queer news.
Soothing, subtle, and strange. Relaxing, reposeful, and a bit rogue. Get ready for Barnyard Records recording artists on tour from Toronto. The unlikely trio of Jean Martin on Suitcase, Justin Haynes on ukulele, and Ryan Driver on the street sweeper bristle bass, playing the lyric and melodic music of composer Mike Friedman. Friday, May 8th at 8 p.m. at the Western Front, 303 East 8th Avenue.
That sounds kind of interesting, don't you think? It is Queer FM on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. This is, I'm Heather, and this is the Queer News. American Supreme Court Justice David Souter is planning to retire after nearly two decades on the court, but his departure is unlikely to change its conservative-liberal split. President Barack Obama's first pick for the High Court is likely to be a liberal-leaning nominee, much like Souter. The White House has been told that Souter will retire in June when the court finishes its work for the summer. The composition of the U.S. court is closely watched by queer activists because the court is frequently the final authority on issues pertaining to queer equality. Some of the names that have been circulating as possible replacements for Justice Souter include recently confirmed Solicitor General Ilana Kagan and U.S. Appeals Court Judges Sonia Sotomayor. Men who have been mentioned as potential nominees include Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, Harvard Law Professor Cass Sunstein, and U.S. District Judge Ruben Castillo of Chicago. A North Carolina congresswoman says she made a poor choice of words when she called the infamous murder of a gay Wyoming student a hoax to justify the passing of hate crimes bills. But she has not apologized for denying the killing was a gay bias crime. During debate in the House Tuesday on the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Act, Republican Virginia Fox said the 1998 murder of Shepard wasn't a hate crime and shouldn't be used to justify a hate crimes bill. Fox said Shepard was killed during a robbery. She made the remarks while Shepard's mother, Judy Shepard, looked on from the House gallery. The comments were immediately condemned by LGBT rights groups. Shepard, a 21-year-old University of Wyoming student, was kidnapped by two men he met in a bar in October 1998. He was pistol-whipped, robbed, and left tied to a fence on a rural, snow-swept country road outside Laramie. He died 5 days later in hospital from massive head injuries. Russell Henderson and Aaron McKinney are serving double life sentences for the killing. In statements to police and in plea bargains to avoid the death penalty, both men admitted murdering Shepard and said they had targeted him because he was gay. And the Maine Senate on Thursday gave initial approval to legislation that would permit same-sex couples to marry. The Senate voted 21-14 to approve the measure following an emotional debate. An attempt by conservatives to put the issue before voters was soundly defeated. The measure now moves to the House. Governor John Baldacci has said he has not made up his mind on gay marriage, though gay marriage advocates have delivered more than 10,000 postcards asking him to support the legislation. Equality Maine and the Center for the Prevention of Hate Violence called on the governor to endorse the bill and sign it if it passes the legislature. The groups also sent lawmakers a copy of a book they prepared that includes interviews with 82 people who tell about the impact on their families of not having a gay marriage law. The legislation would repeal Maine's 12-year-old so-called Defense of Marriage Law, which bars same-sex marriage and makes marriage gender-neutral. It also states that churches would not be compelled to conduct same-sex weddings if it would be inconsistent with their doctrine. The conservative Maine Marriage Alliance has said that if same-sex marriage appears to be on track to legislation or legalization, it would press for a constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage. And now on CITR, the No S-H-I-T Shirleys. From the No S-H-I-T Shirleys here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. This is Queer FM. I am Heather. And still to come on the show, you know, I wasn't sure how the timing on the program was going to work out tonight, so I didn't sort of promise that I'd do anything else other than talk to Spencer and Laura and now Kellen Brecken, but it looks like there is going to be time on the show for something extremely cool, which is This Way Out, the syndicated LGBT radio magazine, did a two-part interview with Anne Bannon, who was the author of some of those groundbreaking lesbian pulp fiction novels in the 1950s. She is actually one of the first people I ever interviewed on Queer FM, and sadly, I don't have the archiving skills of This Way Out, so I don't actually have that interview anymore, unfortunately, because she was such a charming, wonderful woman to talk to. But This Way Out, talk to her, and we'll air that later on the program, or at least part of it. But right now, I am indeed joined by Callan Brecken, Vancouver's gay top model. Welcome to the show, Callan.
Hey, how's it going, Heather?
It's good. It's so exciting. I feel like we have our own Queer About Town, our own spokesmodel here on Queer About Town.
Yeah, I love it. It's really exciting, and it's great to be out there keeping notes of everything that's going on in the community out there for us.
For sure. I was joking, actually, earlier on the show. I was like, I feel like we have our own Fred Lee, only our Fred Lee sounds less gay on the radio than Fred Lee sounds. So.
Oh, there you go.
So last Sunday, while Queer FM was on the air, you were at the Extra West Community Hero Awards. So how was that? How many people were there?
Like, it was good. It was actually really great turnout. From difference from last year is I was told they had it at the Majestic when it was the Majestic, now being Pulse nightclub. But this year it was at the Van City Theater downtown. So they moved up in the rankings, so that was very exciting. They could hold more people and had a bigger venue, and everybody had good seats and all that kind of stuff. So I managed to score second row. Somebody I knew who was in the know and all that jazz managed to get that for me, and everybody who was winning the awards were actually behind us, so it was kind of funny.
Right on. So did you keep a record of who the winners were?
I did. Well, the show first started off with Darcy Michael and Morgan Brayton, who are the MCs for the evening. They started off with some funky dance routine, wearing pink crazy capes, and they're two hilarious comedians. And then Peter Breeze came on with two of his dancers and sang two songs, one of them being Buy Me a Drink. So it was a great start off to the show. But yeah, the winners on there definitely were Ryan Clayton. He won the Youth Activist Award of the evening. And the Coming Home Cafe for Business Citizen. Katie Stobart for the Straight Ally Award. She was actually the young girl who led the Abbotsford March for Social Justice 12.
Okay, what was
December 6th.
So. What's Katie's last name again?
Pardon?
What's Katie's last name again?
Stobart. I do believe it's pronounced S-T-O-B-B-A-R-T.
Okay.
Yeah. So she was the young girl who led the Abbotsford March because she thought it was completely unfair that the one school that was going to offer Justice 12 decided not to.
Mm-hmm.
And another big winner of the evening was Joan E. Finally won Drag Queen of the Year.
Right,
we all know she's been out there doing her thing for quite a while now, so glad to recognize her.
Mm-hmm.
But the big winner of the evening was by far Reagan D'Angelo. So she won not only Volunteer of the Year, but the Trans Alliance Society also won Community Group of the Year because she's been doing lots of work in the trans community, and she's been a big part of that and getting everything going and helping trans people get acknowledged by the government and through medical and all that kind of stuff. So very, very good win, very big win for her that night.
Right on.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just five or are there more of them? Well, there was the Lifetime Achievement Award,
there was a couple more, but I didn't want to take up too much time by naming every single.
Okay, well, let's start with the people that you named then. So was everybody there, first of all?
Yeah, everybody was there. Actually, when the Trans Alliance Society won, one of the girls, Amy, was actually in the bathroom. It was really funny. She came, like, running down the stairs. It was hilarious. And they're like, where's Amy? And then Reagan D'Angelo just talks and talks and talks, but it was really funny because everybody's like, well, we'll kill some time when Amy is in the bathroom. So yeah, that was really awesome.
Okay,
and also there was lots of more performances too. There was not only Peter Breeze who opened the show kind of, but there was Chris Dirksen played a cello and she was amazing. She records it and then she layers on top and then records some more and then layers it on top, and by the end of it was just phenomenally. Like, I was drop-jawed. It was so good.
Cool. Keep going.
And the Rainbow Concert Band performed, and Jaylene did a drag queen show, which was very good, and Girls on Top Cabaret closed the evening for us.
Right on. So tell us about the acceptance speeches. Like, what did Katie Stobart, our straight ally, what did she have to say?
She was very grateful because she is so young. I believe she's graduating this year. She's grade 12. So she was very grateful about being acknowledged in the community and being able to be a voice at such a young age. And she thanked her parents and everybody who helped out and everybody who came out all the way out to Abbotsford to march with her and make sure that everybody's voice was heard. So it was really, really sweet, actually. I was really glad that she definitely won one for the community, because everybody thinks of the community as the West End and downtown Vancouver, but it's greater than that. It's all over the place, so we have to have voices everywhere. So it was really nice.
Mm-hmm. And what about Joni? What did she say after all these years, you know, of being like Miss Drag Queen about town?
I loved her acceptance speech. She gave a shout out to the Drag Kings as well, because there was a couple nominated, but she said that they will have their time soon enough, and that when they win that they can have their acceptance speech. But she put it out there that she's like, I just want to let it be known that something along the lines of whenever anything goes wrong in the community, it's always the drag queens that come to the rescue, and that we need to make sure that we're giving them enough credit for everything, because when the parade needed help, it was the drag queens who put on their pantyhose and jumped up to the plate. And when anything in the community kind of needs a fundraiser or something like that, it's always the drag queens who put on their dresses and comes to the aid of whoever needs them. So it is a true fact. Like, I always see drag queens doing their shows or putting together like charity events, and it's so great. So that was kind of what she talked about in her acceptance speech.
Mm-hmm. And what about Reagan? Because she was up there twice, I guess, eh?
She was. She was so flustered. It was great. I actually had an opportunity to meet her before. The person who brought me, they introduced us, and so we chatted for a little bit before that, because I have a good friend of mine, and her cousin is actually just in transition right now, so I was just talking to her about that. And after, when she was winning, she just went on for a good 10 minutes about how she was so happy that she won, and she spent so much of her life downtown and on the downtown streets, and like having to do certain things to be able to pay for her operation. So that was her first speech. And then her second speech, she kind of let Victoria, I can't remember Victoria's last name, but the new chair of the Trans Alliance Society, have their shining moment, and everybody kind of said something. So it was really, really nice. And then afterwards, she was all flustered and couldn't breathe. But it was really sweet, because she was really happy.
Oh, so sweet. Mm-hmm. So what about, I have to be honest, I haven't heard of the Coming Home Cafe. Have you been to it?
The Coming Home Cafe, I've never been to it, but I do believe it's in the heart of New Westminster.
Okay.
So, yeah, and it's they have local gay nights there. I do believe I jotted down something about it. They have gay nights there, and it's the first kind of, here it is. The Coming Home Cafe, providing a welcome gay space in the heart of New Westminster. Owner Guy Dubay has created a rare space for queers of all ages to publicly gather, connect to find the community, and a suburb not particularly known for its gay spaces other than what else is in New Westminster. There's a bathhouse there, but I'm glad that there's some other positive places for people to go and gather in New West. And it's a lot closer to where I am in Coquitlam. Instead of going all the way downtown, just go for a nice coffee, and I believe they have like book nights or chat nights. I don't know. He was mentioning something about that, to go in on Friday nights and that kind of stuff, to like just hang out. And I think I'm going to take a couple of my friends, because it's so much closer than downtown to go there.
Mm-hmm. Wow, how cool.
Yeah, it was. It was really awesome, because I had no idea about it. So that's a good new place to go and check out.
Mm-hmm. And then Ryan Clayton won the Youth Award. What does Ryan do in the queer youth community?
Well, he's been actually around for about 2 years, I believe, and he is, I'm pretty sure he's 22. 21, my bad. Yeah, he's 21, and he's been working a lot with BC's, trying to change BC's classrooms and cultures. So he's been going and giving speeches in Pride Speak and giving workshops and that kind of stuff. And so he where does it say here? Sorry. So he just works a lot with the schools and the center downtown about bringing more knowledge, I guess you could say, to schools, which is a really good thing, and it's also something that I wanted to get involved with, because I know that my old high school doesn't have a Gay-Straight Alliance anymore like they used to have, so I want to go back and get that revamped and bring that out, because I find that some places it's taking off and some places it's kind of falling short, so I'm definitely glad that he won, because he does some very good work for the community.
Cool. Now, the Lifetime Achievement Award went to Marie and Peter Corin. Were they there?
No, they were actually down in Mexico, which was unfortunate, but their son was there to accept the award. But they did do about a six-minute-long video that they had their acceptance speech all done up on there, and they were in nice, beautiful Mexico with big, nice water backdrop to them, and they were very excited and very happy, but sadly that couldn't be joining us, but that's okay. They'll be around in the community. I think they come back sometime this month, they said, but they're always fighting the good fight, but their son was very glad that they are down in Mexico because they rarely get some time to themselves. So he was happy that they could win, but that they are enjoying being together and not working on another cause like they always are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Callan, thanks so much for coming on the show and filling us in. It's great to have you as kind of our roving reporter on the scene. So please come back and do this soon whenever there's another cool event happening.
Well, I definitely will. And also, if they want to find out more information, you can check it out at www.extrawest.ca. They have some clips on there, and you just got to go under the Vancouver tab. And also, the show, or the awards, was filmed and will be on OutTV. I'm not sure exactly when, but definitely be able to check that out soon.
Well, actually, I was just going to say, I found a little bit of video on the Extra site, and so I was just going to go out with that. So I'll say farewell to you, and then I'll air this for folks to listen to. I actually don't know what it sounds like, but we're about to find out. So
great.
All right. Have a great night, Callan.
You too. Bye, Heather.
So, bye-bye. And here is the awards from the website, the Extra website, some clips. It's just taking a moment to load YouTube. Let's see. Computers. There we go.
Since January, so January, like 4 months from the initial time we decided on the venue, and it's a feel-good event where most of these people are volunteers. We're not, you know, they're not high-paid Hollywood actors or whatever. They're just people, most of them just going about their lives, and a lot of them do these special things with just their selfless acts and their talent. And that it's right to honor people like that. And we're a small paper that focuses on gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered issues. And that it's just a really good event. We really get together and feel that community spirit.
Robin Perrell, I'm the managing editor of Extra West Newspaper, which just put on this fabulous Community Hero Awards show. We're here to build community. We're here to honor the community as it builds itself. We're here to nurture that in any way. If we can just pause in our lives to recognize and appreciate each other, that's an honor for us.
I think that people in this community have to, if I can say this, work their butts off. You know, I do think that there's a lot of work continuously.
Okay. I'm going to fade this out, just because although you can see the images of the award show, on the Extra West site in the video part. It's mostly talking heads and not actual clips of the award show. So if you want to see this, go to www.extra.ca and click on the Vancouver tab, and you'll see the link to the award show coverage, and you can watch it, because it makes much better television than radio. And Callan was just saying, keep an eye out on Out TV if you subscribe to it, because they will be broadcasting the whole thing on Out TV. And this is Queer FM on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. This Way Out's interview with Ann Bannon coming up, and this is Melissa McClelland.
Oh, God loves me. Oh, God loves me. On the skirts of my hometown, where the bracken red creek runs, all the locals spend their Sundays polishing their guns. When the main street lights come on, Godspeed if you ain't home. You'll be drowning in the moon. You'll be shining bright as chrome. Oh. He's gonna make himself at home where the fire escape is broke and the girls are out on loan.
Lisa McClelland on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. That's called God Loves Me from her CD Victoria Day. What a great song to play on Queer FM. This is Queer FM for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities. Hello there. And I should mention, I'm Heather, first of all, and if you want to call me, 604-822-2487, you can email me anytime at queerfmradio@gmail.com. And do check out a couple of other things. There is a Queer FM Facebook group. So if you're on Facebook, just do a search on Queer FM, and hopefully you will find the show. And there's also a Queer FM blog at queerfm.blog.ca, and I was mentioning earlier in the show that I posted my top 10 spoofs of the National Organization for Marriage's Gathering Storm ad there. So if you're looking for an entertaining internet time waster, go to queerfm.blog.ca and check it out. And as mentioned, first of all, I should mention that this being the first Sunday of the month that would normally be a Queer FM Arts Edition, you've probably by now figured out that I scrapped that since we're in the middle of an election campaign so that I could talk to Laura McDermid and Spencer Herbert earlier in the program. But I, now that I know that there is some time left in the show, I wanted to, I can dig out some arts coverage, and this is really quite exciting. I was saving this, so I'm going to do the arts edition in the middle of the month, and I was originally going to play this then, but what the heck, I'll play it now instead. Anne Bannon was an author, well, is an author, but in the 1950s, she wrote a number of those lesbian pulp fiction novels that were featured in the film Forbidden Love. And when I actually talked to her, she was one of the first people I ever interviewed on Queer FM, and unfortunately, I don't have that interview anymore, but she was a professor or an assistant professor at Sacramento State University in the Department of Linguistics back then. I don't know what she's doing now, but maybe we're about to find out, because This Way Out, this syndicated LGBT radio magazine tracked her down. And here is part one of a two-part interview that they did with her. And this is Greg Gordon to set it up.
Dwight Eisenhower was president of the United States. I Love Lucy was the most watched show on the nascent medium called television. And in the late 1950s, if you wanted to read about lesbians, you either screwed up the courage to ask the librarian to see something she kept behind the counter, or you bought a pulp novel by Anne Weldy, though that wasn't the name she used on her book covers. Our Steve Pride explains.
Bannon is the pen name of the most popular writer of iconic lesbian pulp novels of the late 1950s and early 60s. Her six books were Odd Girl Out, I Am Woman, Women in the Shadows, Journey to a Woman, A Marriage, and Bebo Brinker. According to the Bloomsbury Guide to Women's Literature, Bannon's character, Bebo Brinker, has come to personify the 1950s bar butch and her ongoing search for true love. But the real life Anne Weldy was a wife and mother when she wrote these books. And take me back 50 plus years. How did Anne Weldy become Anne Bannon?
Well, it was clear to me and reinforced by my very nervous husband that there was no way I could put my actual name on the front of one of those wild and woolly paperback covers. It would end up for sure across the nearly bare bosom of a very seductive lady. And he said, I never want to see that. So I had to find a pen name. It was partly that, and it was partly the problem of sheer terror at being found out. So I went through all kinds of names, and finally one evening my husband had brought home a list of prospective customers. He was a salesman at the time, and on the list was the name Bannon. And I thought, gee, that's nice, and it puts me up at the front of the alphabet, so it had everything to recommend it, plus nobody knew who it was.
Did your husband read your books?
No, he's still living. He's in his late 80s. But he confessed to me about 3 or 4 months ago that he had read only one of them, and that was the first one, Odd Girl Out, and he didn't read it until decades after it had been published and republished by many different publishers. He did, on the other hand, read a few pages when I was writing it. Made him very nervous. But I won an Oscar for being a nice young housewife and mom, and that reassured him. I was very conventional outwardly. And he found it difficult to talk about. He didn't want to believe it. He assumed that I was just jumping on the same bandwagon with a few other women who were writing original pulp paperbacks at the time. And it was very successful. And when my royalty checks began to come in, he cheered up demonstrably.
So how did it all start? How did you become a writer?
I always wrote, and I think providentially at that time, I found on the bookstore shelves a paperback reprint of Radcliffe Hall's novel, The Well of Loneliness, which I found riveting and infuriating because it went from one gloomy crisis to the next, but at least it was a lesbian story and a very interesting one. And practically right next to it on the drugstore shelf was the first lesbian pulp original by an author named Vin Packer, and the book was called Spring Fire. And it was a college romance between two young women who were sorority sisters. And I thought, oh, Eureka, I just got out of college. I was in a sorority. I know about this, too. So I sat down with my husband's old Remington portable at the dining room table, and I started telling the story as cautiously as I could. I ended up with almost 600 pages, mostly about a handsome young fellow who meets one of the two girls in the story, and they end up getting married and going off hand in hand. In the meantime, I wrote to the author of Spring Fire and said, rather portentously, I too have written a novel. And I don't know why she didn't throw my letter in the wastebasket at that very moment, but she got kind of intrigued and she wrote back. And the upshot was she invited me to New York. I was living in Philadelphia. And she said, if you can get up here, I will introduce you to my editor, and you bring your manuscript, and we'll see what he thinks. Well, it took me a while to talk Ward Cleaver into letting this happen, and he finally caved when I told him that I had found an all-women's hotel and that I would stay in the all-women's hotel. And he said, well, then that makes it okay, but you have to promise me you'll stay at the women's hotel. So I did. And I went up there. I met Vin Packer, who turned out to be a remarkable woman, still writing. Her real name is Mary Jane Meeker. She's written as Anne Aldrich and M.E. Kerr and various other names. Absolutely brilliant and very interesting. And she took me over to the Gold Medal Books offices near Times Square and introduced me to Dick Carroll, who was the editor-in-chief. An old movie guy. He'd written film scripts. He'd been a film editor. And they brought him into Gold Medal to see if he could handle the new original paperback section. So he read the book as a courtesy to Mary Jane in just a couple of days. And I went in to meet him with my knees knocking. And he said very kindly, you know, this is not a good book, but he saw something in it. And what he saw were the two sorority girls of my story, Beth and Laura, whom I had carefully shunted off to a shadowy corner. And he said, bring those girls center stage. They are your story. And go home, rewrite the book. It should be half the length it is now. And tell the story of the two girls. Which rocked me because I thought I had been so subtle that nobody would pick up on the fact that the girls were romantically interested in each other. So I went home, I cut the length of the book in half, I told the story of Beth and Laura, and brought it back with some terribly proper title like Same Time, Same Place, which had nothing to do with anything. And within a week, I heard back from Dick Carroll. He said, we love it. We're going to publish it. The title of the book is now Odd Girl Out.
And my secret love's no secret anymore.
continues his conversation with celebrated lesbian pulp paperback writer Ann Bannon.
So who was Bebo Brinker?
Bebo was my fantasy butch, and I kind of dreamed her up based in part on a sorority sister who had the look, but not the emotional engagement.
Next time on This Way Out.
And this is Queer FM on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. And the wonderful thing is you don't have to wait till the next episode of This Way Out for that next part of the interview with Ann Bannon. Here is Greg Gordon to set it up.
Last time on This Way Out, we heard how stereotypically 1950s American housewife Ann Welby overcame her husband's concerns when she achieved success as a lesbian paperback romance novelist. She became famous as Ann Bannon and ultimately came out herself. Starting with Odd Girl Out, Bannon wrote six lesbian-themed novels from 1957 to 1962 that became known as the Bebo Brinker Chronicles. Our correspondent Steve Pride's conversation with the iconic author concludes this week as Bannon describes Bebo's birth, recalls life in New York's Greenwich Village during that era, and responds to being dubbed the queen of lesbian pulp fiction.
So who was Bebo Brinker?
Bebo was my fantasy butch, and I kind of dreamed her up based in part on a sorority sister who had the look, but not the emotional engagement. But she was a beautiful gal, very tall, actually a honey blonde, where Bebo has darker hair. But I took off from that, and I was trying to think, if only I could meet her walking around a corner in Greenwich Village. I knew she would look like a blend of Ingrid Bergman and Johnny Weissmuller. I mean, she was going to be this otherworldly, wonderful, fantasy, buccaneering young butch. And I couldn't quite nail her down until I remembered a name from my childhood. One of my classmates couldn't pronounce her name as a little girl. And it was Beverly, and she came up with Bebo. And I thought, my God, that's it, Bebo. And the name Brinker came to me, and then suddenly I had her whole and entire, as they say. And although I never met the real Bebo, I have met women that came pretty close, that always kind of grabbed me by the heartstrings. So I started with that. She was quite a heller, and she had a lot to rebel against in those times. But she would take jobs that permitted her to wear pants. She bravely and foolishly looked butch. And, of course, those were the days when you had to choose. Are you butch or are you femme? And there's a wonderful story about that that Robin Tyler tells when she was very young and naive, and she came out to some lesbian friends, and they said, well, which are you, butch or femme? She said, well, what's the difference? And they said, well, you know, the femme does the dishes, and she does the dusting and vacuuming. And Robin said, I'm a butch. So Bebo was just born butch, farm kid from Wisconsin, and big, handsome girl. And she had to learn to be as self-assured and sophisticated as she looked. And she did learn that.
What was the gay and lesbian scene in the village like in the 50s?
It really was kind of a magical place. I've described it as Dorothy landing in Munchkin Land and opening the door and everything suddenly in technicolor. Beautiful, fun, and amazing to be able to walk down a street in Greenwich Village and see two guys or two gals holding hands, everyone being perfectly friendly, nobody shocked, nobody remonstrating with you for doing that. It was a charming and a charmed place. It wasn't the only place in the world where wonderful things were happening. I know Los Angeles had a lively community, and they were very active politically with the Mattachine Society. San Francisco was developing the Daughters of Bilitis with Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin. Some scholarly works were coming out. Even Dr. Kinsey took an interest in all this and published, I think, in 1954, his book about the sex life of the human female, which was occasion for rejoicing and opening of champagne bottles in some quarters. But the village itself truly was a sort of mecca for young gay and lesbian people. Because my life took me so far away, it was another 45, 46 years before I was able to get back. And now it looks quite sleek and prosperous. And when I was there in the 50s and early 60s, it looked a little shabby and down at heel, but I don't think any of us minded. It was just so much fun and so validating to be with people who were perfectly bright, sensible people, but who happened to be LGBT people. And they were also the wittiest and the most creative and the most fun to talk to and to tangle with. So I met a lot of people who, some of whom I remember clearly, many of whom I remember fuzzily, but all of whom I remember fondly.
You've written all these love stories that have been read by millions of people. Do you ever find your Bebo?
I came close a time or two. Some wonderful women have passed in and out of my life. I'm not partnered now, but it's okay. I am buried in grandchildren, granddoggies, lots of people in my life, and lots of writing still to do. But, you know, you never give up.
Any regrets?
One thing is that I didn't realize how seriously they were taken and how much they were needed, the old books. Women now say they hid them behind the fridge or under the mattress or in a shoebox in the closet, and they were their treasures. They did live in fear that a parent or an older sibling would find them and they'd be in big trouble, and it did happen to a few of them. But some of them have cherished those books for, it's now over half a century. It was 1957 when Odd Girl Out was published, and how life-affirming they were for most of them. And the other side of that is, I suppose if I had known when I was writing that I was doing something that would be remembered for so many years, it might have paralyzed me.
I've been talking to iconic lesbian pulp author Ann Bannon. For more information, you can visit her personal website at annbannon.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening. No!
There you go. That is This Way Out's interview with Ann Bannon on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. That comes to us courtesy of This Way Out, the syndicated LGBT radio magazine. You can visit them online at www.thiswayout.org and donate money to them so they can continue to bring you programming like that. And right now, this is Queer FM, and this is Pacifica.
Como la belleza máxima.
somos felices.
That is Pacifica and Soul on CITR, excuse me, 101.9 FM Vancouver. Hello there, I am Heather, and it's just about time to wrap up the show, but first, this.
I'm gonna be round my vegetables, I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Sprouts. It's your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub. It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies. It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce. It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems. Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply. Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
Jazz is a word that means many different things to many different people. The best definition of jazz that I know of is the jazz show on CITR with yours truly, Gavin Walker. Monday nights, 9 to midnight, with the jazz feature at 11 o'clock. Check us out every Monday.
Yes, Gavin Walker on the radio, CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, tomorrow night, 9 o'clock, with the jazz show. Also check out, if you like roots music and world music, some of the stuff I play here on Queer FM. Check out Folk Oasis with Val Cormier, Wednesdays from 8 to 10, and The Edge on Folk, Saturdays from 8 till noon with Steve Edge. And yes, it's about time to wrap up Queer FM. Anoop is next with Rhythms India, and if